The Digital Leaders Podcast, Episode 4, Aryan Gorin. Technology is changing the way we connect, learn, and do business. On this season of the Digital Leaders Podcast, we sit down with some of the UK's most influential thought leaders in government, enterprise, and entrepreneurship to learn more about what they are doing to digitally transform themselves and the organizations they lead, why it matters, and what we can do as listeners to build our own prosperous, digitally enabled, and connected communities. The time is now. The place is the Digital Leaders Podcast, and the future is digital. Hi, guys, and welcome back to another episode of the Digital Leaders Podcast. I'm your host, Tara Ferguson, the founder of the podcast production studio SVT Digital, and on today's show, we are joined by the president of Expedia Partner Solutions, Aryan Gorin. Half American, half French, and the youngest of three girls, Aryan spent most of her early childhood growing up in California. She received her undergrad in economics at the University of Berkeley and an MBA from Northwestern University, graduating in the top 5%. After graduating, she eventually moved to Paris, working her way up to director at Microsoft before leaving to join Expedia as their VP of Europe, Middle East, and Asia Market Management. In her 5 years at Expedia, she has held various roles in the organization, her most recent being that of President of Expedia Partner Solutions. On today's show, Aryan will share how Expedia is leveraging the cloud to ameliorate the customer experience, the impact travel has had on her own life and what it has taught her, and how Expedia looks for the next big thing in travel and what it is. So without further ado, please welcome Aryan Gorin. Aryan, thank you for joining us today on the podcast.
Thank you, Tara.
So before we get started, I wanted to talk a little bit about Expedia's growth over the last 5 years. The travel industry is an estimated $1.6 trillion industry. In 2017, Expedia earned about $10 billion in revenue, making it one of the largest travel platforms in the world. So I guess I wanted to ask you, what percentage of the growth that you guys have experienced in the last 5 years would you attribute to technology adoption within your organization?
Certainly the majority of our growth comes from the investment that we're making in technology, both in the technologies which power our platform that we bring to our customers around the world, but also technology investments that we make internally in order to allow our employees to do their jobs better. As a technology company, we invest over $1 billion in research and development every year. So I would say that, you know, both for our growth in helping travelers go all around the world and also in the way that our employees get things done, you know, technology underpins it all.
Yeah, so speaking of technology, I wanted to know, as a child growing up, when were you first introduced to technology?
Sure. You know, I grew up in California in the Bay Area in the 70s and 80s. And of course, you know, back then, you know, the California, it Silicon Valley, like it is the heart of technology in the US and really in the world. My father was an engineer, and on Saturday mornings, he used to take us into his office and we'd see all the work he was doing on semiconductors. But I think that the thing that I remember the most about technology growing up was my first computer, my Commodore 64, and getting to see actually, you know, what you could do with this machine, and, you know, mostly for games. But, you know, growing up in the Bay Area at that time, you know, we were sort of, we were just surrounded by technology. And it always amazed me the things that could be possible from it. And, you know, when I think about today that I work for one of the biggest tech companies in the world, I just think about the way technology can transform and fuel growth around the world and create a ton of economic value. So I would say from where I grew up, certainly technology played a big role.
So you are half French and half American and spent a large majority of your early career working in Paris. And I wanted to ask you, what was that experience like for you?
You know, it was funny. When I moved to Paris, I spoke French fluently. I was half French, half American. I'd never lived in France. And I was working for the same company in Paris as I'd worked for in San Francisco. So I was working for a consulting firm at the time, and I was doing a one-year transfer to Paris. And I just expected that it would be smooth sailing, that it would be very similar to the work and the life that I'd had in San Francisco. And boy, was I wrong, because even if I spoke the language and even if I had family there, I think I underestimated just how different it was to live and work in a foreign country. And I think it really caused me to be more explicit in my decisions. And one of the things it forced me to do was think hard about what is my competitive advantage and what is unique about me and how do I fit in here. So after I was there for a year, I decided to leave the consulting firm that I was with, and I started looking for a job. I must have done about 15 interviews with big French companies mm-hmm. and been rejected from all of them. And for me, I had never been rejected so many times. And
right, top 5% at Berkeley.
I couldn't figure out what was I doing wrong. Mm-hmm. And what I realized is everybody else who was interviewing for the jobs was French, knew the French market well, had done their, their schooling and their university there. And somehow I wasn't fitting in. And so I started to think, okay, wait a minute, Ariane, you're an American here in Paris. You want to stay in Europe. Why not go work for a US tech company with its European headquarters based here in Paris? Because I'll be able to sort of build that bridge. I'll use the uniqueness of the fact that I'm American, mm-hmm. that I can speak French, and really build a bridge between the two countries. And so I had to pivot my job search. And I actually just looked, I said, who are the US tech companies with European headquarters in Paris? And it was Microsoft and IBM. And basically I said, I'm going to do whatever it takes just to get a job in one of those companies. So, working in a foreign country just forced me to be really clear on sort of what's the competitive advantage that I can bring. It also, I would say, forced me to learn to adapt more than I might have had I stayed in my home country. I mean, just really basic things. When I lived in San Francisco, I'd get up at 5:30 in the morning. I was at the gym at 6. I was in the office by 8. I'd have lunch at my desk, have these full days, but then the day was over at 6 and I could go have dinner or do whatever I wanted to in the evenings. When I got to Paris, I tried to have the same schedule. And the first couple of weeks, I would get up, go for my run. I'd be in the office at 8. And nobody else would come in until about 9:30. Then they do work at about 10 and then take a long lunch. And at 6 o'clock when I was ready to go, people would say, okay, it's time to start our meetings. And I remember the first couple of weeks, first I was surprised.
Right.
Then I was frustrated, right? Because I was like, well, I'm coming into the office early. Why is it that I can't leave early? And then finally I thought, Ariane, you're not going to change the way people work
yes.
in Paris, because it's a different lifestyle. People bring their children to school starts later. So if parents drop their children off at school, they're going to get into the office later. So I just had to adapt. So I would say that, moving to a foreign country made me more adaptable. And probably the last thing I would say is I feel really fortunate that I had my children while I was working in France. There's a great healthcare system, a great paid maternity leave, and a ton of support for working parents in France. But I think the thing that made the biggest difference for me is because I still felt a bit like a foreigner, I never felt like I had to fit in. And so all the societal pressures that friends of mine in the US or elsewhere would say that they had pressure to not go back to work, or pressure to work and have it all, I didn't really feel that because I didn't have to fit in anyways because I was a foreigner. Mm-hmm. And I think that was a huge advantage.
Well, as a foreigner currently working in the UK, that makes me very happy to hear. So now I wanted to go back to something that you mentioned kind of at the beginning of the podcast, which was Expedia's investment in research and development. So you mentioned that you guys invest around $1 billion a year. And I know that recently you guys have made a major investment into the cloud. So I wanted to know, how are you guys using the cloud to ameliorate the customer experience?
Yeah, so we've been pretty vocal about the big cloud migration we're undergoing because we believe that cloud will unlock a new level of velocity, both in our innovation cycles, so we can be faster in bringing new products and services to our customers, but also in having the infrastructure be faster so that when a customer comes onto one of our sites, they're getting what they're looking for in a faster way. We plan to operate our own data center footprint for our core functionality for the foreseeable future. But as I said, we've initiated a company-wide effort to migrate a significant portion of our products and capabilities to a cloud computing environment over the next few years. So we are definitely very bullish on it. And you know, I think these kind of technology investments are actually what are going to allow us to keep on innovating and bringing great travel experiences to our customers.
And actually, speaking of investments, you guys actually own a number of other travel companies as well. So you guys own like carrentals.com, Cheap Tickets, hotels.com, Hotwire Group, Orbitz, Travelocity, Trivago. How are you guys working with other like smaller tech companies to sort of leverage their technologies to be able to offer your customers a more unique experience?
Sure. As you said, you know, as Expedia Group, we are the world's travel platform. And we have many brands, as you've just mentioned, Expedia, Hotels.com, and Hotwire, that are part of the Expedia Group family of brands. The business that I run, which is Expedia Partner Solutions, is our partnership brand. And through what we call EPS, we're actually powering other partners to help them provide travel experiences and services to their end customers. A great example is there was a startup a few years back in Southeast Asia called Traveloka. It was founded in 2012, and it was a small startup meta search site by an ex-Silicon Valley engineer. And he had some funding. He was growing in his local market. But in order to become more relevant to his travelers, he needed to give them access to hotels and other accommodations outside of his home market. So if he had someone in Indonesia who was looking to travel to California, he didn't have those relationships with hotels. Mm-hmm. So that's where my division, EPS, partnered with this company, Traveloka, so that they could, you know, focus on what they were good at, the marketing, the technology, the knowledge of the local market. And then they could use our hotel supply elsewhere around the world. And Traveloka has actually been a great story because we started partnering with them back in 2014, and they have just grown phenomenally since then. We actually, as a company, as Expedia, invested in them in 2017, and they are now one of the leaders in online travel in Southeast Asia with over 2,000 employees. So that's just an example of how, you know, we have our own brands, but we also have this partnership division that can go partner with other companies, in some cases startups,
right,
in some cases large airlines, who are looking to provide travel services that they don't want to fulfill on their own through us.
Ah, right, right. Yeah, I guess that's sort of another division of the services that you guys offer. Is that correct?
Exactly. Exactly. It's a partner solution business.
Very cool. Very cool. So I wanted to ask you, in 2017, Expedia won Best Place to Work in the UK as part of Glassdoor's annual Employees' Choice Awards. So I wanted to know, how do you cultivate an award-winning work environment and foster innovation within your teams?
I think it comes from a few things. The first is, you know, we work in travel with a technology lens, and I think that gives us the opportunity to go solve big, bold problems that matter. And I think people always feel more engaged when they have interesting work that they can do. And the way that we go target these big, bold sort of opportunities or challenges is with a culture of test and learn. Trying new things, embracing failure, not worrying if something doesn't work, but just constantly having a learning attitude and applying that to big, bold problems. So I think that's the first thing. We also spend a lot of time talking about having an inclusive and flexible environment. Nobody's perfect here, and there are plenty of areas that we can get better. But in terms of flexibility, we try to allow our employees to mix their personal life and their work life, and to work from home when they need to. We encourage all managers to talk to their teammates about what is the flexibility that they need. One of the personal examples that I've experienced is a couple of years ago, the woman who is the CFO for my business wanted to work from home on Wednesdays, and she actually had to move a bit outside of London. And so we sat down and talked, and she decided the way she wanted to organize herself was taking the train in Monday morning and then staying in London and leaving Tuesday afternoon at 3 o'clock, then working from home Wednesday, and then doing the same thing on Thursday and Friday. And actually, it made her probably a more effective leader to have the flexibility that she needed in order to make her personal life fit into her work life. So I think that there's a lot about flexibility. And one of the programs I'm particularly proud of that we started a year ago here in London is called the Happy to Be Back program. And the Happy to Be Back program really came from this idea of, it started from maternity leaves, and then we sort of extended it to say, people will take breaks. So whether they're taking breaks for maternity or paternity leaves or other reasons, and when you transition back into the workforce or back into the office, it's not always an easy transition. So how do we support our teams and our managers with those kind of transitions? And that's why we invented this Happy to Be Back program, where we support people coming back in and their managers through that transition. And the final thing that gets called out a lot in the Glassdoor is just the great benefits that we have, benefits for employees, whether it's around health and medical, or we just announced an extended parental leave. So I would say it's sort of a combination of all of those.
Are you guys hiring?
We are growing.
That is good to know, because I'm saying there's not a lot of bad things in that review, but I guess that's how you guys made the Employees' Choice Awards 2 years in a row.
Yeah. Well, I think we're very fortunate. It's a fun environment. It doesn't mean that everything is easy every day. Certainly we're all working very hard, but I think it makes such a difference to also work in an industry where we really believe that we're having an impact in the world. Again, travel is a force of good in the world, and it makes it, it brings the world together and makes it a smaller place. And the fact that we get to come in and work on tough technology, big, bold problems, but for the good of something like travel and making the world a smaller place, I think also gives people a lot of pride.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And you're making it more accessible for people who a lot of times might not have had the opportunity, so that's very cool.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Now, speaking of travel, I'm assuming you had the opportunity to travel many places given your work with Expedia. But I wanted to ask you, is there one place in particular that really had a memorable impact on you?
I think the trip that had the biggest impact on me was the summer that I was 13 years old. I went and spent 3 weeks in Italy with my mother. And I'm the youngest of three girls. So as the youngest of three siblings, typically you sort of are not the forgotten one, but no one necessarily has time for you, because by the time it gets to you, it's like, okay, we're so busy with everything else.
Right, right. We've done this before. We know you're going to be.
Exactly. We've done this before. Whatever. But my mom took 3 weeks out and traveled around with me, and we visited museum after museum, and had dinners and lunches, and of course arguments like you would when you were 13 with your parents. But that trip, I think, gave me a love for Europe. That was when I thought, one day I want to go and live in Europe. It opened my eyes to just so much history. All the history that I had learned in school until then came to life
right
in the Renaissance in Italy. And, you know, as a mother of children who are about that age, I've actually been thinking recently about when am I going to take a trip like that with my children, just one-on-one, because, you know, 13, 14 is a pretty pivotal age for children growing up. So for me, I would say it's Italy. And I've decided that when I turn 50, I'm going to take a 2-month sabbatical. I was telling my husband recently, I'm going to take a 2-month sabbatical and we're going to go do a similar trip, except instead of 3 weeks, it'll be 2 months in Italy.
That's amazing. Now, do people at work know this? Because this is a live, it's going to go live.
Oh, it's a few years down the road.
Okay. Good to know. I don't want, you know, Expedia calling me like, we heard on the Digital Leaders podcast. Ariane, please.
So we'll dig it back out.
That's phenomenal. That's very cool. Now, I wanted to ask you, given everything that you've been doing with travel and what you guys are doing at Expedia, I wanted to know, what is the next big thing in travel and how do you guys actually look for it?
I think the next big thing in travel is going to be all about using information to make travel inspiration and the booking experience more personalized and more predictive in real time. And, you know, I think to me, it's all about sort of putting the A back in OTA. So, you know, 20 years ago, people, when they would book travel, they were used to having someone who they would talk to, someone they trusted and who had arranged their travel for them.
Well, that's true. And I remember that.
Exactly. And I mean, it still happens a lot. There's still quite a bit of travel that happens through offline travel agents or advisors, but a lot also happens online and through technology. And I think what we see in the current technology is that we're positioned to deliver a promise, whether it's in mobile, whether it's messaging, that you can actually use machine learning in order to put the agent and the A back in OTA. And I think what that means is knowing the customer's preferences and really personalizing solutions, whether it's at the travel booking or when you're in trip. You know, how is it that we're able to understand when you're in trip? You know, what is the next cool thing to do? Or has your flight been delayed? And so we let you know, or it's been canceled, we let you know, and we rebook without you having to contact us.
Oh my gosh, I would love that.
Wouldn't that make a difference in travel?
It would for sure. Because don't they say travel can be one of the more stressful things that people do?
That's exactly right. Is, you know, travel, which is supposed to be this beautiful, romantic, enjoyable thing, ends up being stressful. And, you know, it can be stressful in the purchase experience, you know, because you're always worried, did I get the best deal or do I need to look in another place?
Right.
But then also stressful when you're in trip.
Mm-hmm. Very true. Yes. You know, if your flight was delayed and there could be sort of anticipation of what would this person want to do in the interim or canceled, and there was some anticipation as to where can they stay, where can they go. Well, I guess it's exactly it. It's kind of thinking about the entire experience, knowing it wasn't part of the plan and kind of mitigating for that.
Exactly. And you need to have information about, you know, someone's trip and then also information about what are the other things around. So I'll give you an example. 3 weeks ago, I had to go to New York for a business meeting. And I went to LaGuardia, and then I was flying out of LaGuardia. And it just happened that, you know, I was flying from New York to Chicago. There mm-hmm. were 5 flights that day. I was on the 2 p.m. flight, and mine was the only one that got delayed. And I had to wait, and it turned out it got delayed by 5 hours.
Oh, my
but
gosh.
If someone had known, oh, wait a minute, there are 3 other flights that, you know, Ariane's flight has been delayed for 5 hours. There are 3 others that might be taking off before that. Can we just rebook her? Then mm-hmm. I wouldn't have had to wait 5 hours in the airport because there were seats on the other flights. Mm-hmm. So how do you do that in real time without the traveler even having to ask?
That's cool. I'm excited. That makes me excited for the future of travel. Alrighty, so now we are going to go into our lightning round. So how it works is I'm going to ask you a couple questions and you're just going to tell me the first thing that comes to mind.
Okay, let's go.
Okay, so here we go. The one book I would recommend to all listeners and why is?
Daring Greatly by Brené Brown. It's a book that's inspiring about being authentic. And it's one of the books I've read recently that's maybe be the most thoughtful about my experience as a leader and as a person and as a mom.
The one person I would like to have lunch with and why is?
So my oldest sister passed away of lung cancer a year ago, and I would like to bring her back and have lunch with her.
The one thing people would be surprised to learn about me is?
That I'm an introvert. I think people often think of me as I lead a big team. I am passionate about what I do, but deep down I'm an introvert and I love spending some quiet time at home.
And the advice I would give my 15-year-old self would be?
Take more risks. Don't worry about what other people think. Turn off that little voice in your head that's either keeping you from making a bold move, like moving to New York when you're 22, and worrying about what are other people thinking, and just go blaze your own trail from a young age.
Okay, so that is it. Are there any final words of wisdom you want to share with listeners?
I think the best advice I've ever gotten is, if you live your life in harmony with your values, the universe will give you what you need when you need it. And it sounds a bit new agey, but I think what I've learned over the last few years is that if I'm authentically myself and I speak my mind, you know what? If I'm in an environment where people don't want me to speak my mind, well, I'm not going to change. I'm just going to change environments. So I would say for each of us, it's to have the confidence to be authentic and to live our lives in harmony with our values.
All right, there you go. Those are some very wise words from the president of Expedia Partner Solutions, Aryan Gorin. If you live your life in harmony with your values, the universe will give you what you need when you need it. I love it. And so now we want to know, what do you think about the idea of leveraging AI to anticipate your needs when it comes to traveling? Let us know in the comments below or reach out to us on social media at DigiLeaders. Next episode, we are back with another great guest, so make sure you are subscribed to the podcast via iTunes so you do not miss it. I'm your host, Tara Ferguson. Thank you so much for listening, and we will be back in 2 weeks with another episode of the Digital Leaders Podcast.